From Hat Studio 3A in West Lafayette, I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, ready to run down the top news and information from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture on Hoosier Ag This Week. On today's show, that Thanksgiving meal is a bit cheaper this year than last year. We'll preview Commodity Classic, agriculture's biggest farmer-led event. My colleague C.J. Miller will join us to share about a new partnership between Indiana FFA and the National FFA organization to promote ag education in Indiana schools, and he'll also share how one Hoosier farm family is living the American dream on their dairy farm after moving here from Belgium nearly 20 years ago. Andy Eubank has market analysis on the way, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana farm forecast in less than 10 minutes, so stick around for that. Let's begin today with the Farm Bill. Earlier this week, Senate Democrats finally unveiled their 2024 Farm Bill text, led by Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow. But the lame duck session bill has been described by many as just simply lame. C.J. Miller reports how the Senate Democrats' version may just get ignored at this point by Republican lawmakers.
The reality is it's not going to happen this year. I don't know if it's going to happen early next year.
And that's Kip Thom, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Agencies for Food and Agriculture during President Trump's first term in office. He's also a farmer based in Kosciuszko County and has been mentioned as a possible candidate for Secretary of Agriculture. With Trump returning to the White House and Republicans taking control of both the House and the Senate, Thom believes that Republican lawmakers have the chance to get what they want in the next farm bill, as opposed to having to make a great deal of concessions with Democrats.
Obviously, we're taking back control of the Senate. Senator Bozeman will be over there on that Senate Ag Committee leading that. There's no doubt I think he'll push forward to try to get that bill done. I know there's some other potential relief plans being discussed at the moment to go out to farmers to help them fill that gap between now and that time frame and to deal with this year's low commodity prices. But a farm bill is what we need to have, but we need to make sure that it's structured properly.
Thom says that Republicans will be looking to focus much more of the farm bill next year on the needs of America's farmers.
Listen, we all know that farm bill is 83% food assistance and about 17% actual agriculture. We need to make sure we put more farm back into that farm bill. And whether it's in a form of crop insurance, supporting that to a better degree, making sure it's more durable, more reliable for the farmers like ours that buy that crop insurance. We've got to have that. So this is why I say, let's put more farm back into the farm bill, and let's make sure we clean up the food assistance programs that take place in our country today.
After this week, only 3 weeks remain of the lame duck session of the 118th Congress. The 119th Congress will be sworn in January 3rd. I'm C.J. Miller.
All right, C.J., thanks. While you're out this weekend getting everything ready for your Thanksgiving Day meal on Thursday, just know while the prices still do look high, they are a bit lower than a year ago. Each year, Farm Bureau sends out volunteer shoppers around the country to calculate the cost of a typical Thanksgiving Day meal for 10 people.
So according to our volunteer shoppers, the average cost of a Thanksgiving meal for 10 people is $58.08, or about $5.80 a person.
That's Farm Bureau economist Barrett Nelson with the findings across the U.S. The findings in Indiana were a little bit less, $53.31, or $5.33 per person, but many of the trends and prices are quite similar at the state and national level.
This is about 5% lower than last year, but it's almost 20% higher than just 5 years ago. So even though we've had 2 years of decline in prices, this doesn't erase the dramatic increases that we saw that led to record high prices in 2022.
He says shoppers will see increases in the price of several items.
The biggest increases were kind of in some of the big ticket items. So we had foods like stuffing and dinner rolls. These went up by about 8%. The biggest price increase was in the price of cranberries. So this was up 12% this year. And something to keep in mind is that cranberries saw a significant decrease last year, around 18% drop in prices. According to our survey, this year's price increase puts cranberries closer to the historic norms.
And Nelson says this year's basket of goods reflects the overall economy.
While inflation has slowed down, it really hasn't slowed down enough to bring costs back down to these pre-pandemic level. So it's really important to remember that our farmers and ranchers, like our consumers, are also dealing with inflation. So the cost of supplies to grow food has gone up, while USDA predicts that net farm income is going to be down nearly 25% compared to just 2 years ago.
We have all the results from the Indiana Farm Bureau survey on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. You can find the results from the Farm Bureau National Survey if you go to fb.org. More farm news is on the way here on Hoosier Ag this week. We also have Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin coming up with his Indiana farm forecast. But right now, let's switch gears to the markets and welcome in Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. It was a mixed day, only soybeans higher at the end of trade. We'll have those numbers coming up. We'll begin, though, with market analysis from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. I spoke with Brian in the middle of the Friday session. Beans are up, corn is back and forth. Wheat has been lower throughout the trading session, but a glimmer of hope going into the weekend for corn and beans. What do you see?
Yeah, thanks for having me as always, Andy. I do think we're seeing a glimmer of hope for the beans. Maybe they tested the contract lows in that January contract, which are 973.5. And I think we saw a little bit of short covering down there. We've got a long way to grow in this South American growing season. I'm not saying that that is going to hold moving forward by any means, but at least until we get further along in this growing season, particularly in Brazil, the market may be hesitant to really pressure that to the downside at these levels. I would remind your listeners, though, going forward, that if Brazil does approach what the USDA is forecasting for them, those lows definitely could be vulnerable moving forward into December and January. But coming back to Friday's trade here, I think we're seeing some short covering. On the corn side, we continue to see good export demand. On Thursday of last week, the USDA reported a really nice export sales total for corn. We're way above last year, over 260 million bushels above last year in terms of outstanding corn sales, what's on the books and not been shipped yet. So the market is looking at that and realizing that U.S. will probably be the main shop in town, if you will, Andy, all the way into early, if not mid-2025. So, yes, we have a record crop. I'm not a record yield. We have ample supplies, but we're certainly trying to put a dent in that pile of corn, and so that's supported things. Wheat, I think, we're still looking at the concern about the Black Sea situation, but maybe a little bit of a pullback from that. But, boy, that's a very fluid situation. I wouldn't want to go too far out on that limb what could happen there. But yeah, it's nice to see the producer standpoint. I see beans at least hold for the time being and corn hanging in there. At some levels we haven't seen for a while here.
It sounds like as far as what markets may do in the future that you're relatively optimistic for corn and not so much soybeans.
Yeah, and I think from a risk management standpoint too, Andy, I'd remind your listeners that, again, I sound like a broken record sometimes, but the crop insurance period is set, the price is set. You got to defend your balance sheet. It's very important for a producer to defend that balance sheet with any unpriced 2024 corn and soybean bushels. And if we're looking at the Brazilian crop potential this year, that soybean balance sheet here in the U.S. could look very heavy by the time next summer rolls around.
Market insights from Brian Basting, economist at Advanced Trading. Brian's number is 309-664-2314. Here are the Friday settlements now. December corn ends down just a little, a penny and a quarter lower at 425.5 after a back and forth last hour or two of the session. 435 and a quarter March corn down a penny. May down 0.75, 442.5. Up a nickel and 0.75 on January soybeans, 983.5, 992.25 for the March contract, and May 10.05 3/4. Both March and May finishing up 7 cents. December wheat down 4.5 cents, 544.25. March down almost a nickel. In the meats, December live cattle, 186.77, up 117. February, 188.20, up 77. December lean hogs, 81.67, up 87. February, 85.67, up $1.02. That's a look at the markets, and on Hoosier Ag Today's weekend show, there's much more still to come. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
From the Farm Bill to foreign farmland ownership and international trade, ag policy is having a big impact on Indiana.
Indiana farming operations. The Hoosier Ag Today Indiana Ag Policy Podcast provides in-depth coverage on these and many other important and complex issues. Get the details behind the headlines with the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, hosted by Eric Pfeiffer. You can find it at HoosierAgToday.com, the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Moderating temperatures over the weekend, and then we see another leg down in cold air as we flip over the calendar into December. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. The weekend here initially to start doesn't look too shabby. Your Saturday and your Sunday both feature good sunshine here across the region. After we had to deal with some lake effect cloud cover and all of that jazz just a few days ago, I think we're putting together a very nice Saturday and Sunday period. Temperatures back above normal for the most part in a lot of areas. If you got snow on a Thursday or Friday, it's not here and it won't be here for the next few days. So let's move forward then as we go into this work week ahead of us. We probably are going to be dealing with some more clouds for Monday, and anywhere from 40 to 60% of the state may see a spit or a sprinkle. I think we're looking at a few hundredths to a tenth or two. That is all. The best chance for moisture as we kick off this week is going to be in central and southern Indiana, but I won't rule anything out anywhere. This little system does serve as a boundary to draw down some colder air again. So temperatures are chilly as we move through Tuesday and into Wednesday. However, I think we're dry for the most part in there. Overnight Wednesday night into Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, we do have to deal with another round of light moisture trying to come out of the central plains across the Missouri Valley and through the eastern Corn Belt. At this point, the moisture does not look over the top. I'm going to say half an inch or less of liquid equivalent, with coverage at around 75 to 80% of the state. Central and southern Indiana in line to pick up the best moisture, but I don't want to rule out anything anywhere else. It could end as some sloppy wet snowflake action too, but the moisture is done by, I think, the noon hour or so on Thanksgiving Day. And then we're seeing another leg down in temperatures. Cold air comes in behind that Thanksgiving Day front, and that triggers a lake effect, precipitation and cloud cover through a Thursday overnight and Black Friday. Do I think it's going to be a travel mess on Friday as everybody wants to be out running around and shopping? No, but in northern Indiana, southern lower Michigan, back towards Chicago, all of those areas, key lake effect areas, I think we are going to be seeing some on again, off again wet snow, strong north winds in for the weekend. The weekend also features the flip of the calendar from November to December. And as we do that, guess what? Another surge of cold air comes. I think as we kick off that week of December from Sunday the 1st right on through probably the 4th or 5th, we're going to be looking at well below normal temperatures here. Coldest air of the season is on the way yet. This roller coaster ride has more down slopes of the hill than coming back up. I do think that once we get toward the 5th into the 6th, temperatures moderate in a sharp way, but it's going to be a very cold week there to start off December, at least compared to what we have been seeing. That's the way your forecast is stacking up. Have a great rest of your weekend. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Farming smarter. Well, that's something we need more of in these tough economic times. And to farm smarter, you need the right tools, like the Hoosier Ag Today e-newsletter. Every morning, a roundup of the latest farm news, a statewide ag weather forecast, and a recap of the markets is delivered to your email inbox. Start your day smarter. Sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today e-newsletter. It's free. Sign up today, get smarter tomorrow at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Welcome back, and we appreciate you spending some of your weekend with us here at Hoosier Ag Today. This is Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Commodity Classic is headed to Denver March 2nd through the 4th.
It's the top show in the country when it comes to agriculture, so we want to invite everybody to come, and registration just opened up, so we're hoping that they get online and they register.
That's Ken Hartman Jr., president of the National Corn Growers Association. Commodity Classic is presented annually by NCGA, along with the American Soybean Association, the National Sorghum Producers, the National Association of Wheat Growers, and the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Commodity Classic is touted as America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused, agricultural and educational experience. The trade show alone features over 400 exhibitors, and more than 500,000 square feet of exhibit space.
One thing I don't know if people realize is when you go to that trade show at our Kamai Classic, it's actually leaders from the industry there when it comes to marketing people from the different companies. There's sometimes some engineering people from the different companies, so you can actually talk to them and find out what's going on with some of the new technology. A lot of them, you know, last year they unveiled some new products. This year I'm sure they're going to unveil some new products at Kamai Classic.
Educational sessions will also take place throughout the three-day event. This will be the first time the Commodity Classic will take place in Denver. Hartman explains why.
Well, we've been trying to move around to different areas, and you know, one of the things that people don't realize is we've gotten so big, there's only certain cities we can go to, and this was an opportunity to change venues that could handle us, so that's why we're going there.
Registration is open now, and Hartman encourages you to register by January 15th for the best rates. You can find a link to register on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. The Indiana FFA and the National FFA organization have teamed up to launch a new initiative to promote ag education in schools, as well as the career opportunities that are available in the ag industry. CJ Miller has the story.
So I think the biggest thing that this initiative is going to do is allow our students to see, first of all, what's in it for me. That's always their first question is, what am I going to get out of joining this?
And that's Cameron Frazier, ag educator and FFA advisor at South Putnam High School near Greencastle. The initiative is called Grow With Us, and the website is indiana.growwithus.ag. It features videos and information for students where they can learn more about the benefits of an ag education. But Frazier says the website isn't just for students.
Also, we always have parents questioning, what is my kid getting into? And now with this initiative, we're able to show them visually instead of just telling them what it's going to be about. And hopefully that will initiate maybe that little drive to talk to their kid and maybe like, hey, maybe you should join FFA and take an ag class.
He says that the ag classes that are offered in schools today are much different than the ag classes that were offered when your parents and grandparents were in school.
We pride ourselves at South Putnam in agri-science research, so every single one of our ag education students have to complete an agri-science research in one of the different areas. So we have some that complete it in ag technology. I had 2 eighth graders who decided to weld and see this different tensile strength of welds. We have students that research the different types of fish food that's going to work the best for them. So yeah, it is definitely not like it was 20, 30 years ago. We are really pushing innovation in agriculture. These students are all about what's going to innovate that next step of agriculture in the future.
Frazier adds that the goal of the initiative is to help prepare young leaders for careers in the ag industry. And that includes developing new technology for the next generation of America's farmers.
They may not be in production agriculture or agriculture. They're going to go out into these fields, and the fact that we can support them while they're high schoolers and we have that guidance through our ag teachers and FFA advisors, it is a phenomenal experience that they're going to get to have.
The Grow With Us initiative is supported by a grant from the Lilly Endowment. The website, once again, is indiana.growwithus.ag. You can also find that link at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
Tar spot was found in all 92 Indiana counties this year, and we continue to learn more and more about the huge yield robber.
Tar spot is there, right? It's not a matter of if you're going to have it, it's a matter of when.
That's BASF Plant Health Technical Marketing Manager Kim Tudor. She says for tar spot, timing is everything with fungicide applications, especially in this farm economy.
Our lead recommendation there is Veltima fungicide. When we look at all of our data across the board, generally speaking, the best bang for your buck is that 7-ounce rate at that VT to R1 timing.
If you have a history of tar spot in a field or you're particularly worried about it,
our sort of second recommendation is going to be take that rate up to 10 ounces. See how far that's going to carry you, right? A lot of folks were saying this year, you got to have 2 applications. You have to apply 2 passes. And with low commodity prices, that second application, that's a second trip across the field. It can get expensive. But with a product like Veltima, you're going to have that really, really long residual disease control. And so that 10-ounce recommendation, I think, served a lot of growers well this season.
If you do decide to take a second fungicide pass, Tudor offers this advice.
You want to keep them 20 to 28 days apart. So generally speaking, around that V14 to V16 timing is when I would hit it with my first application of Veltima. And then that second pass around R2 to R3. And again, we would recommend either Veltima or our headline ant fungicide.
You can learn more about Veltima on the BASF website. There's a link on ours, HoosierAgToday.com.
This is as dire a circumstance that I can see in my time in trying to address the saving of rural America.
That's Kansas Republican Senator Jerry Moran at a Senate Appropriations Committee hearing last week on Capitol Hill. Senate appropriators argued for more disaster help for farmers while slamming USDA's positive spin on net farm income during the hearing. USDA Deputy Secretary Xochitl Torres-Small insisted recent net farm income has been pretty good.
The last 4 years, one has been a banner year, setting record numbers. The other three have all been within the 20-year national average.
Top Ag Republican John Bozeman wasn't impressed with the data point.
20-year average doesn't mean anything right now. There's no person working in America that wants to be at the 20-year average.
Especially farmers. I think those inputs are a bit higher now than they were about 20 years ago. You can read more on this and find other farm news anytime at HoosierAgToday.com. We've got much more to come here on the weekend show. CJ Miller takes you the rest of the way next here on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
I mean, you know, it's always tough when you're changing farming practices. The people that use starter fertilizer have used it for many, many years as an essential part of their operation. So you have to prove it. And that's one thing in a tough farm economy. One thing that's critical for biological manufacturers like DPH and others is you have to very clearly describe the ROI for the grower, what's in it for them, and have very credible data that supports the what's in it for them to even get through the door. And, you know, that's been a part of our focus is being able to very clearly describe and demonstrate ROI for the grower so that they get what they, you know, what we tell them our products will deliver.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today on the road in Decatur County near Greensburg, Indiana at Halsbosch Dairy. I'm with Wim Halsbosch, one of the co-owners of Halsbosch Dairy. The reason I'm here today is because the dairy operation has a very unique story to tell. In fact, Wim, tell me the story of your family's dairy farm, how your family and your parents in particular, Wim, came here to the United States in such a short amount of time and created this amazing dairy operation that you have here in southeastern Indiana.
So it all started with my parents, Mary and Dominique, in 1987, started with about 18 cows in a rented tie stall barn. They've always been looking for the next opportunity. So they, in Belgium and Europe, they grew the herd to about 80 cows. Due to government restrictions or a quota system at the time, we were not allowed to grow anymore. And so they saw myself and my two younger brothers expressing a lot of interest in dairy farming and agriculture. And so they wanted to make sure that for our future, they could provide us an opportunity. And that was going to be very tough at an 80-cow dairy. And so they started looking for opportunity elsewhere, did a tour in the United States. And the Midwest here, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio area, really spoke to them. We settled in Decatur County. One of the reasons was mom didn't want to move up north because it was it's colder there in the winter. So we kind of looked more south. And then we just found a great place here in Decatur County, some crop farmers initially that were willing to help produce crops for our cows. And off we went. So in 2005, we made the move to the United States. We built a dairy farm, built a house, and then in August of 2008, we started milking cows here.
How many dairy cows did your father and mother start with in 2008?
It kind of ramped up with, you know, a few cows, but we had room for about 2,000 head, but it took us till about 2010 to fill the barns completely. And then after that, we've kind of continually grown throughout the years to the size we are now.
Chatting with Wim Halsbosch here on Hoosier Ag Today. The size of the operation now, can you tell me just how many dairy cattle that you now have milking here at the farm?
Yeah, so there's about 8,000 cows here, which 6,600 of them we milk three times a day. Most of them are Holstein cows. Other cows would be either heifers that are getting ready to have a calf, or cows that are dry before they're also getting ready to have a calf.
You have quite a large footprint in terms of the economic impact here at the dairy farm, not just within the property line here, but outside the property, extending all across Decatur County and southeastern Indiana. The number of folks who not only work here, but the impact beyond the dairy farm is just tremendous.
Yes, sure it is. It truly takes a village. So we have about 80 full-time employees here on the farm, as well as lots of partnerships with neighboring farmers or vendors or people that help us out with different things throughout the year. For example, forage harvest or growing forages. It truly takes a lot of people to make this happen.
A lot of folks may not know that if they shop at their local grocery store, when they go to Kroger and pick up a gallon of milk, if they live in southern Indiana, that milk came from this farm.
Yeah, definitely. So we ship our milk through a co-op called Dairy Farmers of America, and most of our farm's milk goes to a Kroger plant in Winchester, Kentucky, where they bottle milk and ship it out to their stores. There's a very good chance if you pick up a bottle of Kroger milk that you're drinking our milk.
Not only do you have the operation here in Decatur County, but also plans to open a new operation in Rush County. What can you tell me about those plans?
Yeah, so we're super excited to be building a state-of-the-art dairy farm there as well. We plan to milk about 6,500 cows there. It will create about 45 new jobs and about 110 or so indirect jobs through trucking and all kinds of other jobs in the local area.
And that's going to be near the Milroy area, not far from Rushville in Rush County. I love the story of your family, Wim, because there's no other country I can think of on the planet where you can move to, and in a relatively short amount of time, as long as you invest the hard work and the effort and the energy and you do things the right way, your family story is the prime example of the true American story, if you will.
That's right. America is definitely the number one place to be for there's opportunities everywhere you look. You just have to put your mind to it and work at it.
And once again, Wim Holzbosch, co-owner of Holzbosch Dairy in Decatur County, not far from Greensburg. Once again, a true American success story if there ever is one. Wim, congratulations once again, and thank you so much for sharing your time with us here today on Hoosier Ag Today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And with that, we close out another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, feel free to download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. From all of us here at Hoosier Ag Today, we wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving and safe travels this coming week. I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.